guys, welcome to Cracked. I'm your host, Tristina Tucker. Before we begin, I want to share a very exciting new development with you guys. We have recently welcomed Jen Troyer to our team. She will be splitting co-hosting responsibilities with Kendra, so hello, Jen.
Hey, guys.
Today we have a case for you that everyone knows, but not everyone knows well. It's a story of love, hate, fame, money, domestic violence, racial injustice, and murder. This case was covered by every news outlet in the 90s and is still talked about today. It's often referred to as the trial of the century. This is the story of O.J. Simpson. Now, before we dive into this, I would like to say a few quick things. This case does discuss some very mature topics, and we don't recommend listening if you're under the age of 13. We are going to be talking about some very heavy racial issues that may be sensitive to certain listeners. We will also be talking about domestic violence, so please be advised of that as well. I also want to make note of the fact that you can follow along with us on our website. We will have photographs posted under this case's page. We do advise discretion, though, because there are crime scene photos on the website that are a little graphic. They aren't super gruesome, but they definitely aren't for the faint of heart either. Now, for those of you who didn't grow up in the 60s and 70s, I want to tell you a little bit about Mr. Orenthal James Simpson. OJ, sometimes referred to as, quote, the Juice, was this crazy good athlete, and he was basically America's hero in his golden years. He was a running back for the University of Southern California, and he was described as very serious, very passionate, and, quote, an overall good guy, end quote. Around this same time, there were a lot of racial issues in Los Angeles, and specifically in the LAPD. The African-American population had increased by 600%, and they were coming from all over into LA. The entire police force was crazy racist and very racially inconsiderate. Police brutality was so bad and everyone was rioting. At one point, the police chief, Daryl Gates, said, quote, "We didn't ask these people to come here," end quote.
That seems like a terrible thing to say as a police officer. I mean, your job is to protect everyone.
I think so too. It just seems really unprofessional and very rude in general. The thing about OJ was that even though he was black, he wanted to be a part of white culture. His friend Joe Bell said that OJ was, quote, seduced by white society, end quote. He kind of avoided speaking out for civil rights and focused on his own football career. At one point, he even said, quote, "I'm not black, I'm OJ," end quote. Simpson was asked to endorse big brands. He was even the star of the Hertz Rental Car Company's commercials. They pictured OJ running through the airport and everyone waving and saying hi to him because everyone loved OJ Simpson. The black community loved him and the white community loved him.
Why did the black community love him if he didn't speak up for them?
I also thought the same thing. I think the reason for this was because OJ had this sort of charisma that just kind of made him irresistible to everybody in America. In 1969, OJ started playing for the Buffalo Bills. When he first started there, he struggled at first, and he didn't really play very well. Once they got a new coach, though, OJ improved and really became successful. In 1979, OJ retired and went into the acting business. Keep in mind, up until this point, OJ was married to a woman named Marguerite that he had met when he was just a young adult. One night, OJ went out with some of his hotshot homies to this club. While he was there, he was sitting with the owner and he saw this beautiful girl waiting tables. The owner had this girl come over and say hello, and as she was walking away, OJ said, quote, "I'm gonna marry that girl," end quote. That girl is the one and only Nicole Brown, and she was only 18 years old.
Wait, how old was he?
He was 30.
Holy S-word, that's crazy.
Yeah, I know, I mean, it's almost illegal. Even though he was married, the two went on their first date. Nicole was living with a friend of hers at the time, since she was only 18. He said that Nicole came back from her date and her jeans were torn because OJ literally ripped them off of her. Not long after this, OJ wanted to buy Nicole a car and an apartment. This is kind of the beginning of OJ gaining control over Nicole from an early stage in their relationship. I do think, though, that they did love each other. Even though it was sort of a different dynamic, Tanya Brown, Nicole's sister, said, quote, "When these two were together, it was love," end quote. In 1979, OJ divorced Marguerite. He also made plans to retire, and he became a sports commentator for the Buffalo Bills. He moved to 360 North Rockingham Avenue in Brentwood, LA. For those of you who don't know, Brentwood is very similar to Beverly Hills in the fact that they are very rich suburbs. There really wasn't any African Americans living in Brentwood, but then again, no one really thought of OJ as black. They thought of him as just OJ. On August 26, 1979, OJ's nearly two-year-old daughter, Erin, and side note, this was his daughter with Marguerite, died of respiratory failure after falling into a swimming pool 8 days prior. In 1985, OJ and Nicole got married. During his speech, OJ said to Nicole, quote, "You brought love into my home," end quote. Not long after, they had two kids named Sydney and Justin. Ron Shipp was a friend of OJ and Nicole's, and he was also a police officer. He would bring other cops by Rockingham, which is what they called OJ's house, and they were all so excited that they were going to get to meet OJ. Around this time, OJ started to become more entitled. He tried to make sexual advances on other women. Nicole knew OJ was having affairs, and she was angry, which caused most of their arguments. OJ even went out of his way to rub his affairs in Nicole's face. When Nicole was pregnant, OJ had an affair with Tawny Catane, and he blamed it on the fact that Nicole was getting fat.
Wait, she was preggers, and he cheated on her and called her fat?
I know, what an A-word. On January 1st, 1989, Nicole called 911 because OJ was beating her. The 911 operator sent out a unit right away. When the police arrived at Rockingham, the officer goes up to the gate and presses the button to be let in. It's then that he sees Nicole, who comes running out of the house in sweatpants and a bra, covered in mud. She was screaming at the top of her lungs, quote, "He's gonna kill me. He's gonna kill me." The officer asked, "Who's gonna kill you?" And then Nicole said, quote, "OJ, OJ's gonna kill me." She told the officer that police had been there 8 times before and all they did was talk to him. The officer asked Nicole if she wanted him arrested and she said yes. Then OJ came up to the gate and said, quote, "I don't want her in my bed anymore. I've got two other women. I don't want her in my bed anymore," end quote. The officer tells OJ to go back inside and get dressed and then they are going to arrest him.
Why did they let him go back inside?
I don't know. I think because they knew he was famous and they didn't want to get on his bad side, but to me, that's a terrible excuse. After a few minutes, the police see OJ's Bentley pull out of a secondary driveway at Rockingham. They try to pursue OJ, but they are unsuccessful. Later on, he gets brought in and claims his fight with Nicole was just that, a fight. Not much is known about what happened after that, but obviously OJ did not serve any time for spousal battery. This interaction is often referred to as, quote, the New Year's Eve incident, end quote. The officer from that night kept his police report because he knew that this case was going to be mishandled, and he even had suspicions that OJ was going to kill Nicole. One important thing to note is that Nicole documented all of her fights with OJ and took pictures of her bruises each time he abused her. She also kept a journal with every violent encounter she had with OJ. In this journal, there are entries about OJ kicking her on the ground for hours as she tried to crawl away to the door. There are also points where he called her and her family explicit names, and then he would slam her into furniture.
Oh my gosh, did OJ ever find the journal?
I want to say no, since police were able to get a hold of it, but again, I'm not sure and I don't really know for certain. When OJ and Nicole took a trip to Hawaii, they went to this restaurant, and Nicole was holding their son, Justin. There was a homosexual man sitting at the table next to them, and Nicole let the man hold the baby, and he kissed Justin on the forehead. OJ then freaked out. In Nicole's journal entry for that night, she wrote, quote, "Hawaii gay man kissed Justin. OJ threw me against walls in our hotel and on the floor. Put bruises on my arms and back. The window scared me, thought he would throw me out."
That sounds really bad. Did anyone know what was going on, or was it just under the radar?
A lot of their friends suspected that the abuse was bad. They all kind of wondered if Nicole was going to leave OJ. Nicole told Ron Shipp that she would have left him if it weren't for the kids. Nicole also felt that since OJ was supporting her family, that they would side with him in a divorce.
Why would her family side with him?
Well, I think it was because he kind of provided for them financially. OJ called Ron Shipp and asked him to talk some sense into Nicole and to tell her that he wouldn't beat her again. When Nicole hears this, she kind of warms back up to OJ. She even calls the CEO of Hertz, his sponsor, and tells him that the, quote, New Year's Eve incident was all a misunderstanding and that it was a false arrest. On October 25th, 1993, Nicole called 911 because OJ broke into her house and was ranting. She also told the operator that he had not been drinking. This was kind of the final straw for Nicole. She talked to her friend Robin Greer, and they sold OJ on the idea that Nicole needed space. OJ loved controlling Nicole, so he did not bend easily, but eventually he let it go. Nicole moved out on her own and bought a house on South Bundy Drive in Brentwood, Los Angeles. Nicole did well when they got the divorce, and she continued to pursue her photography career. Keith Zlomsiewicz owned a restaurant called the Mezzaluna in Brentwood. He was very attracted to Nicole, and so he introduced himself, and they began to hang out more. One day, Keith, Nicole, and some of their friends were at the Mezzaluna when OJ came in. He walks over to the table, slams his hands down, looks Keith in the eye, and says, quote, I'm OJ Simpson, and she's still my wife, end quote.
Wait, I thought they got a divorce.
They did, but OJ was still very possessive over Nicole. He even had people follow her, and he would plant people in her friend group to tell him where Nicole was going to be at. One of Nicole's friends said that, quote, he was as jealous as he was a good football player, end quote. One night, Nicole and Keith got a little too friendly in Nicole's living room. It comes to light that OJ sat outside the window and watched them. The next day, OJ came in and told Nicole that he was going to speak to her privately. He screamed at her, and when she came out of the room, she was as white as a ghost. OJ then shook Keith's hand and left.
That's a little sus.
I agree. Nicole also developed a crush on Marcus Allen. He was a younger football player and OJ was his mentor. Nicole and Marcus had hung out a few times, but Nicole said that it was nothing more than a friendship. Shortly after, OJ and Nicole started dating again. On October 5th, 1993, OJ broke down Nicole's back door. Nicole called 911, and you can hear OJ screaming in the background and yelling at Nicole about her relationship with Keith. You can also hear Nicole telling OJ to be quiet because their kids were sleeping upstairs. On Sunday, May 22nd, 1994, Nicole wrote in her journal that her and OJ were split for good and that she didn't love him anymore. A few of their friends said that OJ had a light switch moment where he realized that Nicole didn't love him anymore and that she was done with him. It was speculated that Nicole was seeing Marcus after the split. OJ told Nicole, quote, if you ever see Marcus again, I will kill you, end quote. And when police are called to 875 South Bundy Drive in the early hours of June 13th and follow the trail of blood that leads them to two almost decapitated bodies, they realize that OJ wasn't bluffing. But you're gonna have to stick around until the next episode to find out exactly what happened.
We want to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. There are many more twists and turns in the episode to follow, so make sure to tune in. Please be sure to give us a follow on Instagram at crack.crime.podcast and Twitter at crackedcrime. You can also visit us on our website, which is linked in our bio. Feel free to send us an email with any case suggestions or questions regarding the case at crackedcrimepodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and be sure to join us next time for Cracked.